the volume.
What is up, everybody? John Middlecop, Three and Out Podcast. Just witnessed a dominant performance by the Hoodie and the Patriots. Belichick is back. The Patriots are back. And we will pretend we didn't even witness anything with the Atlanta Falcons because that was ugly. A lot coming up on the show about Belichick, who, as it was reported this week, is the highest paid coach in the National Football League. And I just have some thoughts on the payment structure with coaches. Obviously, a lot of talk in college football. Mel Tucker getting a 10-year, $95 million. Hell, he hasn't even signed it yet as of recording this. Lincoln Riley potentially offered big money. Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll. Money's flying. And, you know, for the most part, I think it's well-deserved. We'll fly a little bit around the league, touch on some of the bigger games and the Jets. What an embarrassment. You know, starting Joe Flacco really is pretty sad. Middlecoff mailbag, slide up into those DMs at John Middlecoff is the Instagram. You slide up into those DMs and you get your question answered here on the show. It's really pretty easy. It's how we interact with the people. Okay. I wanted to start with what we just witnessed. And I just want to check the final scores, 25-0. And I've always been a big believer in the statement because I think it's a pretty tried and true formula if you think about life like this and if you just observe everything around you. The cream always rises. Always. Now, it doesn't always go at the same speed, depending on what industry you're in, the people you're around. Hell, we all take different paths. And some people pop immediately. Some things take a while. Some businesses, it happens overnight success. Others can take 20, 30 years. But I think the best people in their field, the best people in their industry, if they obviously have the work ethic and the focus and the discipline, if they stay focused, will come out on top. And at minimum, have a lot of success. And Bill Belichick is a good example of that. He lost Tom Brady, and let's face it, most of you were shitting on him. Where it was all Tom. It was all Tom. And I said this last week. I judge you not on your best moments. We've all had good moments in life, right? We, you know, most girls look good on their wedding day. How do you look on a random Tuesday? You know, most guys can, you know, drop some weight on a diet. Can you maintain it for years? Anyone can be nice for a day. How do you treat people when no one's looking, right? Belichick, in his lowest moment, when he had a quarterback who could not complete passes, still went 7-9. This year, he had all offseason, builds a defense, signs a bunch of guys, help, trades Gilmore midseason. He never even played a snap for him. Drafts a quarterback, signs some wide receivers and tight ends, rebuilds his team. This year, has some tough early losses. Doesn't complain, doesn't smile, doesn't frown, just looks like the little curmudgeon that he is. But he's the greatest coach in the history of the sport. And most importantly, he's the greatest defensive coach in the history of the sport. Watch the two Bills. Bill Parcells gives him credit for devising the game plan to beat Bill Walsh to go to the Super Bowl and then to build it to beat the Buffalo Bills. That's Belichick. He was the brains of the schematical operation. In an offensive league, I talk about this. I've been saying it for weeks with Mike Vrabel. We don't give guys like that credit because it's all about offensive coaches. The greatest defensive coach in the league is kicking everyone's ass right now on defense. And now that he has a serviceable offense, and we'll get into Mac Jones in a second, his team's headed for an 11 or 12 win season. Now, I don't think they have enough firepower. I don't think their quarterback's good enough to ultimately win the division because I do think the Bills' defense is really good and just Josh Allen, he's just much better than Mac Jones. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. And let's face it, early on in the season when they lost some of those kind of heartbreakers, right, to Dallas in overtime, that Tampa game on the missed field goal. We went, a lot of people did. All the Patriots, all they're screwed. No, guys, they have the best coach in the history of the sport. He was never going to go out like a chump. He's too good. He is notoriously for working like 20 hours a day. He does not get tired. The guy does not get phased. that documentary that's coming out about John Madden had pictures of when John Madden was coaching for the Raiders in 1975 and 1976 and 1977. On the opposing sideline was a young assistant named Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has been coaching in the NFL since the mid-70s. I'm 37 years old, and I was born in the mid-80s. This guy's knowledge of the sport, combined with his work ethic, his drive, his ultimate ability to constantly adapt and change, is unparalleled. It's the best. And now he has a team, and it took him a year with the Brady thing to figure it out. He's figured it out. They're 7-4. Let me pull up their schedule a little bit. Now they got a long little layoff. Their next game, the Titans, pretty big game. Game's in Foxborough. I'll promise you this. Belichick will be ready. Then he's got, he basically has the division will be decided in December. Plays the Bills, then at the Colts, and then the Bills again. That's the season. And his bye is after the first Bills game. So the Titans at the Bills, his next two games. Let's just say he split, let's say he beats the Titans, loses the Bills. He would be 8-5. Then he gets a bye, then he gets the Colts, then he gets the Bills. He finishes with the Jags and Dolphins. So even if he doesn't win the division, he's winning, I would say, at minimum 10 games. Pretty solid comeback for a guy who spent all the money, and everyone's like, oh, Bill's just spending money. What's he doing? He knows what he's doing. You see Matt Judon kicking offensive tackles' ass every single week. Kyle Van Noy, Brian Flores cuts. Sure looks like Bill's figured out how to use him. Gets rid of Gilmore. Oh, is this guy J.C. Jackson? Has like 6 picks this season. Another pick 6 tonight. Didn't he have a pick 6 2 weeks ago? Guy's got pick 6 every time I look up. Belichick, tip your hat to him. Give him his flowers, as the kids would say. I do think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on Mac Jones. And listen, I'm not trying to diminish what the guy's accomplished. It is hard, I don't care how good your team is, to start as a rookie. The NFL is very difficult. It's your margin for error, coming, especially coming from Alabama, is much smaller in the pros. But I listen to some of these shows, not that many. I don't even listen to Sports Talk Radio, but some of these podcasts. And I think a lot of people are anointing him like he's some superstar, like he's Andrew Luck. Listen, I swear to God, I didn't chart it, but since the start of the Brown games to about midway through the Falcon game, he had thrown like 12 or 13 screens. Anytime your team, like their team is based on two things, playing defense and running the football, which, I mean, it's great. Any quarterback would like that, right? It's the quarterback's best friend. Having a good defense and having a good running game. But he really benefits from that. He does not have to throw the ball 40 times a game. So when you're seeing, well, he only had 4 incompletions. Well, he's throwing 5-6 screens a game, and he's pushed the ball down the field. He throws some picks. He threw his 8th interception tonight. Again, really good player. Very impressive to do this with the Patriots. I give him he's two things that I really admire in any quarterback. The most underrated aspect of the position, he's tough. If you're tough, you got a chance. If you're tough and smart, you got a chance to play for a long time. He's both those things. But his physical attributes, his arm's not that great. He gets to dink and dunk all game. And as someone texted me tonight, they said they were watching ESPN last Sunday. Teddy Bruschi was breaking it down how Belichick did the same thing for Tom Brady as a rookie, which is good coaching. Make it easy for him. But he's lucky a lot of teams wouldn't have the defense good enough to do this for him. They would get behind. The Patriots just get pick sixes every game. Shit, they had 2 tonight. Maybe not 2 because he stepped out of bounds, but they had multiple picks. So, again, I will commend him to play consistently every week, to, as Belichick would say, do your job. But we're acting like he's a Pro Bowl player. He's just simply not. Right now, that doesn't mean he can't be. I do question like how great of a player he can be, but I have come around. He's better than even I thought. Though, back to what I said, he's playing for the greatest coach of all time. He's playing for one of the greatest offensive coordinators of his era. He's playing on, you know, I haven't studied every defense in the league, but I think it's fair to say, just, I don't know what the numbers and the metrics say, but it sure as hell looks like to me the Patriots are a top 3 defense in the league. And they have a stable of running backs. And they probably have one of the best screen games in the league. And they got 2 good tight ends, which he's doing a good job hitting the tight ends. I'll give him that. He made a couple good throws. He's not scared in the pocket. but let's stop acting like he's just headed to Canton, you know, where one day he's going to be some $50 million a year quarterback. He's benefiting a lot from it right now, doing a great job. And really, all Belichick needed, again, last year he went 7-9 with a quarterback who could not complete passes. He now has a guy that can complete passes. They're headed for, you know, 11-5, or I guess that's the old yays, 11-6. Honestly, they feel like an 11-6 season, which that's what Belichick does. He wins.
NFL season has given us a big Week 11 divisional matchup. Rivals, the Arizona Cardinals and Seahawks. FanDuel Sportsbook's about to make it even bigger. They're giving new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. That means you can make $150 on a $5 bet. One of the things I love about FanDuel is the same game parlay. Two bets, great odds, one game. They got prop bets like Kyler Murray over on the passing yards or James Conner anytime touchdown. FanDuel makes sports betting simple. It's safe. It's secure. It's easy to use. The payouts. I love betting the NFL on FanDuel. It's so easy. Plus, you win 2 hours, you get paid. $50. FanDuel is hooking all customers up when you refer a friend. Plus, your friend gets $50 too. See for yourself. Just sign up, promo code Colin this week before the Cardinals take on the Seahawks. $150 and a $5 bet. Please use the promo code Colin exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia or West Virginia. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbookfanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, and Virginia. Or call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Redline is 1-800-889-9789. Or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona.
I wanted to start with a story that I saw on the internet streets yesterday. And it's long been debated. What does Bill Belichick make? No one knows. You know, unlike college programs, especially like I know in California, the state schools, UC schools, a lot of information is public. The only college coaches we don't know in my state is Stanford and USC because they're private. So we don't know how much David Shaw and whoever USC coaches make unless it gets leaked out. And even then, we don't actually have records of it. The NFL is no different. It's not a public company. We have no clue what coaches make. Though every once in a while it gets leaked, but still, you just have to take it at face value from the leaker. And it's clear that the top coaches in professional sports and in college are worth an astronomical amount of money. And I've always just made educated guesses that Bill Belichick probably makes $20 million a year because it always felt like the top coaches, maybe it's gone up a little bit recently, made 10. Well, this week it came out that Bill Belichick makes $18 million. And I saw Mike Florio take the tweet. I think it was from CBS Sports who, you know, did this breakdown of what all the top coaches made. And he said, that's not correct. It is way more than that. And he listed other coaches like Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, 14, 15, Andy Reid, 12, which to me is a crazy number. But we'll get into that in a second. Think of, and I think a lot of times, you know, like for example, Roger Goodell. It was reported a while ago that Roger Goodell made $128 million in like the last calendar year. And of course, the media, they hate business and they don't really understand it. And they freaked out like, I can't believe how much did he make? It's like, guys, do you know when deals are made, you get points on the deal? When, hell, you're the sales guy, let alone the CEO of the company. He led. Now, you can say it would have happened no matter who was in charge. He's in charge. And he led the negotiations that got him a $110 billion television deal. I have friends in sales, like if they do a $10 million deal, then they whatever the company net profits off that, they get 5% or 4% or 8% or whatever their bonus structure is off the deal. So if a deal, they make $1 million deal, net profit for the company, they may get an $80,000 bonus, $50,000 bonus, whatever you negotiate. He negotiated a $110 million deal. So you do the math, $128 million. Money's all relative. People like get so caught up and like, I can't believe. Well, yeah, the guy, Bill Belichick, runs a $5-6 billion operation. And one thing's clear. In the Patriot organization, he's the most important person. There is not one player on the Patriots that Robert Kraft or Jonathan Kraft would take over Bill Belichick. Now, for 20 years, you would, you know, it was Tom, right? But currently, there is, and that includes Mac Jones. There's not one player on the Patriots that you would take over Belichick. So Belichick's value, like if this was a public company valued at what they're valued at, he'd be making $30, $40 million a year. And when you think about the money he's made for that franchise, from all the Super Bowls to the valuation of the franchise skyrocketing to one of the top two or three teams in the league, he played a big role in that. And Brady was compensated, even though he was taking discounts. Like the two most important guys of the dynasty, Brady made probably exponentially more than Bill. Now, that's the going rate for players. And you could argue that Bill, I'm sure for a long period of time, was even underpaid. And even at $20, $25 million, I think I could make the argument that he's underpaid. Now, one thing that's not arguable, he deserves to be the highest paid coach in the NFL. Like, that's the industry he's in. He's the best. You know, he's been doing it the longest. That's what he got paid. The number that jumped out to me, and again, we don't know if this is true, and it's not like I'm going to text Coach Reed and be like, dude, you really make $12 million? But if that's true, there is not a more underpaid individual in the NFL than Andy Reid. Do you understand what he's done to the value of the Chiefs? Let's face it. When he took over, they had the number one pick. They're in a smaller market. Kind of, you know, we're teeter-tottering of being a franchise that once was good, had a great fan base, had this historic owner, but was kind of a clown show, was a joke. He's got there. When they win the division this year, he'll have made the playoffs 8 years, 8 of 9 years. He has been to two straight Super Bowls, 3 straight AFC championship games, and now coaches, you know, one of the best players in the league. And you go, well, unlike the Chiefs, I wouldn't blame the Hunts. I would take Mahomes over Coach Reed, just like you would take Mahomes over any coach, right? Just like you would take LeBron or Steph Curry over any coach, right? That's just the nature of how great Mahomes is. But Andy clearly is the second most valuable guy there. So if Mahomes is making 40, to me, Andy, listen, if Belichick's making the most, maybe he makes a couple million dollars under him. But the value that he brings to the franchise has been dramatic. The money that he has made ownership has been dramatic. And they stayed on that tier of upper echelon. They are now an absolute cash cow for a league that makes the majority of their money in the $110 million television deal. Right. And think about this. Like when I was telling you about my buddy that he was actually going to leave, and we'll get into Mel Tucker here in a second. The greatest thing you can have in negotiations is obviously leverage. And when you're young, you don't even realize, for most of us, don't realize what that is. And hopefully by the time, you know, for me, it happened in my mid-30s. Maybe some of you, it happens younger in your 20s. For some people, it maybe happens in their 40s. Sometimes it just never happens. But the moment you get leverage and you use it to your benefit, you go, shit, I just made way more money because I had options. And if the place you're at wants to keep you, or the company you're partnered with wants to stay with you, when you use leverage, the money goes up when they value you. And when you look at some of these coaches, like if Andy Reid was on the open market, what would a team give him? Right? 5 year, $100 million deal? I don't even think teams would hesitate to do that. So his value and what he's given his franchise is pretty crazy. It really is. Mel Tucker, for example, we talk about leverage. Is he truly worth 10 years, $95 million? I like Mel Tucker. He's done an impressive job at Michigan State. That seems a little rich. But he had leverage. LSU, who I saw Jay Boy of the Volume Network, if you like college football, listen to his show, said that right now that LSU has a standing offer for eight years, $95 million to Lincoln Riley. Now, I know some people around the Boomer Sooners, and they've been pretty adamant that he is going to stay at Oklahoma. Just built a big house, but money talks, shit walks. So we'll see. And you could argue LSU's a better job than Oklahoma, but Oklahoma probably has the best AD in the country. It's one of the more stable major programs in the country. I would probably stay there if I was him. You know, Collins thing, you can't, you know, there's no happier happy. Like, life's pretty good. You're also going into the SEC. But, you know, who knows? You know, you have to make the best decision that only Lincoln Riley truly knows. But Mel Tucker, who got this 10-year, $95 million, the reason he got so much money is LSU wanted him. And they're willing to spend $90, $95 million on a coach. So did Michigan State truly start this year of like, we can't wait to give him a $95 million? Would they have rather just given him $50 million extension? Of course, but he had the leverage. And it got me thinking yesterday, If Mel Tucker is worth 10 years, $95 million, don't forget, Nick Saban a couple years ago turned down the University of Texas for 10 years, $100 million. And I remember people on the internet, hell, myself, I was like, that is pretty nuts. That is a crazy amount of money. I know he makes a lot at Alabama. I know he's a god, but 10 years, $100 million, all guaranteed? Is that even that much anymore? I mean, for Nick Saban? Like, what would Nick Saban be worth if you wanted to give Nick Saban a three-year extension? 3 years, $60 million? Because whatever Mel Tucker's worth, he's at minimum worth double or triple. You could argue if he was a little younger, is he worth $500 million? Can you imagine the value like Belichick? To me, these guys are cash cows. They bring an enormous amount of money. Bill brings it to the crafts. Nick brings it to his university. The amount of money he has made the University of Alabama is probably unquantifiable. They've done studies about the applicants have gone up dramatically since Nick Saban has been there. But it is pretty crazy the money getting doled out. And you know why the money is getting doled out at this rate? Because the money football makes. Obviously, the NFL is the ultimate cash cow every year. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Now college football is doing that. I said this yesterday. Every single assistant coach in other sports, every head coach, women's soccer, men's baseball, men's women's volleyball, you name it, should send Mel Tucker, beside Tom Izzo at Michigan State, should send Mel Tucker and every other football coach in the Big Ten thank you letters for the money and the jobs that they provide. Because without them and the cash, and major college basketball as well, that's why Tom Izzo doesn't have to send a thank you letter. There would be no such thing as college sports. They would not exist. No different than, like, I saw the Monday Night Football rating for Shanahan versus McVay. The 49ers versus the Rams was the highest rated Week 10 game since 2012. Now, part of it is the Niners are the biggest brand, probably west of Texas, in football. Lakers are pretty big, too. But for football, I mean, they are. And television ratings speak for themselves. And the Rams just... adding Odell Beckham, Sean McVay, like a huge part of that is like the coaches in the sport of football now are obviously quarterbacks are really important and they get paid the most. But if we're doing the hierarchy, we often talk about during draft time, like what do you value, right? Quarterbacks, defensive end, left tackle, corner, wide receiver. How about we just go quarterbacks, coach, and then everything else? Like if you don't have a coach, do any of the other positions mean anything? You could argue not really. Like, this is a coaching sport. It's all about the X's and O's. It's all about schematics. Like, most guys are ready to play come Sunday or Monday night. It's do you have the coach to out-coach your opponent? And that's been the sport basically my entire life. Hell, it's why coaches were stars when I was coming up in the 80s. Bill Walsh, Bill Parcells, Joe Gibbs, Jimmy Johnson. I mean, this is the nature of the beast. So when you see these guys making all this money, it's all justified. And honestly, I think a lot of these guys are underpaid. I saw a story yesterday that just made me shake my head. And listen, we're not talking much New York Jets football on here because they're basically irrelevant. They suck. They're one of the worst organizations in all of sports. But I thought that they did something really intelligent a couple years ago, hire Joe Douglas, who my buddies that still work with the Eagles worked with him. They love the guy. They think very highly of him. And then they hired Robert Saleh this offseason, who's fellow bald brother. And I've obviously watched him closely here in the Bay Area. I know people that were really, I don't know him personally, but was a big fan. I know people that know him. I watched all his press conference. I think very highly of Robert Saleh. So I'd say Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh, like that's a pretty good young, GM head coach operation. Like I would feel pretty good if I owned the team or I was a fan of the team with those two guys running my operation. But sometimes I wonder, like, do dysfunctional organizations, do dumb organizations make smart people? Do they drag them to their level? Because I have a hard time thinking that these two guys would make the decision in which they made, starting Joe Flacco this week. Now, Zach Wilson, their starting quarterback, is injured. He's not available to play. And Mike White, to as of recording this, I haven't heard or seen anything that he is injured. He's healthy. He's basically demoted. And when you are a bad team, you want to get as many reps with younger players. Like they're going to lose. No one's expecting them to win. They're competing to be a top five drafting team. So you want to see every single person on your roster, starter or not. And when a starter goes out, which ideally, especially at quarterback, when you take the guy number two, you don't want to happen. But when he gets injured, which a part of that is the way he plays pretty recklessly, but that's a whole offseason project to coach his ass up. You have this backup, pretty young guy, who showed some flashes in a pretty big win that you had a couple weeks ago. Then he played terribly last weekend. But to bench him for Joe Flacco, a guy that will not be on the team next year, to me is the ultimate head scratcher. Successful people always take short-term L's for long-term wins and long-term gains. This is such a short-sighted, short-minded approach. Now, here's the one thing that would concern me more. Are they hesitant that, listen, if they throw Mike White out again and he plays well, and then I'll have two of his three starts, we'll have good games, people will just be like, keep starting Mike White, and that will ruin Zach Wilson's confidence? Well, if that's the case, you already have the wrong quarterback, right? That's already a problem. Now, there's always the element, because I think sometimes we jump over this part of pro sports, is that the owner tells you what to do. Like, you know, the guy that signs your check can at any moment, like, start Joe Flacco. I want to try to win this game. Or last year, start Tua. Or trade Jimmy Garoppolo. That happens in sports way more than any of us will ever know, because the head coach and the GM are making $7, $8 million and the GM's making $3 or $4 million. They just got to eat it. Part of being in that position is when your boss tells you something moronic to do, he pays you a lot for you to do it. So you just suck it up, you put your tail between your legs, and you do it. That's always a possibility. I have a hard time thinking that, given that they suck. To me, there's two theories. One, they easily got just dumb overnight and became dysfunctional like the organization they're in. And they're like, oh yeah, let's just start Joe Flacco. Which, I don't know. Like, I have a hard time seeing that. They're like, playing the Miami Dolphins defense. They run complex blitzes. Like, yeah, I've watched Miami. They suck. They're terrible. You could start me or you versus Miami. Who cares? Or it could be that they are a little nervous and scared that their young quarterback has a long way to go, has some maturity issues, has some questions in the locker room, hell, has some insecurities of his own, which you would argue would be understandable as a young player. But are we sure that, I know they would tell you, and they would never admit to this, that they have the right guy? You know, and if they're already making weird moves with their backup quarterback to make sure, they hired John Beck became like this quarterback offseason whisperer for the Shanahan tree. So anytime that you had a young quarterback or in the draft wanted a quarterback prospect to see how he'd look in the offense, LaFleur, McVay, Shanahan, obviously Saleh and LaFleur's brother are now in New York, they would give him to John Beck. And John Beck became very, very tight with Zach Wilson. Well, this summer, a horrific incident happened, actually not too far away from me. Greg Knapp, who's like a quarterback guru, tragically was hit by a young teenage driver and killed. Fucking awful. I mean, just hurt your heart now thinking he's got daughters. Awful. So, and I think they would tell you the reason we didn't have a veteran quarterback, like Greg Knapp was going to be that guy as a coach, and then it just kind of happened. So in the middle of the season, they randomly hire John Beck, who is just like Jordan Palmer. He just works out quarterbacks in the offseason, gets paid by these teams, gets paid by these agents, probably was making good money. Well, did Zach Wilson demand this guy come on board? Did you do it to appease Zach? Zach Wilson think he's LeBron James? I question taking Zach Wilson number two overall. I'm like, I don't see it. I think it's going to be weird. And now the organization is just doing a lot of weird things kind of surrounding him. And they can say whatever they want. And listen, they have no choice. They kind of got to lie, because if that's the case, you couldn't come out and say it publicly. But just over the next 12 months, keep an eye on that bad boy. Keep an eye on that little situation. He starts playing poorly, especially his second year. And some of these other quarterbacks, obviously Trevor Lawrence has a long way to go. Mac Jones is playing well. Fields is taking steps. We probably won't see Trey Lance much till next year, but I didn't see it at number two. I thought it was insane. And now they're already having to do like NBA type moves for a young quarterback, let's face it, who hasn't proved it. Let's go around the game. Some games this week. There are some pretty good games on paper. And I had forgotten this, but I saw Pat McAfee tweeted out this video of Jim Irsay in the locker room pounding the table saying, we will rock you. And then I realized the Colts are doing a mid-season Hard Knocks. So I don't know if that's a Showtime, HBO Max. I have to go find that because it looks pretty good. But for, you know, early on in the season, I think they started 1-3. It looked terrible. It's like they're in shambles. Are they going to bench Wentz so they don't have to give up their first round pick? They're pretty good. They're 5-5. I like the Colts. They have a clear identity. They are going to slam the rock. Jonathan Taylor, really to me, his only knock when he was coming out of Wisconsin was fumbles. And if he holds on to the ball, like the guy's going to be a star running back. That's just period, point blank, end of story. And Wentz, he just needs to play under control, not turn the ball over. And their defense, like they're going to be good. To me, they are an AFC playoff team. Now, they're going to Buffalo. They're a clear underdog by, you know, depending on where you look, 7.5 points. The Bills been a little out of whack, but their defense is really, really good. And to me, they're bound to get it kind of going. Like, to me, this is a little bit of a heavyweight fight. Like, this has potential to be like a seven, not a heavyweight fight because the Colts, you know, are seven seed. But, like, this could be the 2-7 matchup, you know, come wild card weekend. Like, this could be it. So, keep a close eye on this. Josh Allen, who, you know, started out slow, had a good week last week. Stephon Diggs got rolling. One thing with the Bills, you know, they're not a lock to win the division. Like, they have to keep winning. They're obviously still fighting for the number one overall seed, which, you know, we'll see how long Tennessee can go, though they got Houston this week. Part of playing in the AFC South is, and they've already played both their Indy games, is you get the Jags and Houston. That's four games. That's four wins. But I'm very excited to see this game. I actually think the Colts can keep this a little closer because two things travel in football. And I know they're a dome team. It's why I think historically sometimes some of those early Peyton Manning teams, you'd see them late in the season outside. They just didn't quite look the same. They were kind of made for a dome. Well, when you run the ball and play good defense, like you can travel. It wouldn't shock me if this game is a lot closer than people think. Packers, Minnesota. Justin Jefferson is a flat-out superstar. I saw Davante Adams was saying like he looks more like a six-year vet than he does a second-year player. You watch the game he played last week against the Chargers. Some of the passes that he's catching, I mean, are just stupid. The guy is... I wanted to pump the brakes a little bit. I'm like, you know, 1 year, no fans. Fucking baller. Absolute baller. Like, it's going to be hard for Jamar Chase to be a better player than Justin Jefferson. That's how good he is, and I think Jamar Chase is really good. Minnesota has been really solid all season long. They haven't won some games. They just do stupid things. And I don't trust Cousins in big spots, but he's much better at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, for those of you who live on the East Coast, those 1 o'clock kickoffs, than he is the night solo games. Well, he's not playing a night solo game. He's getting the Packers at the morning game in Minnesota with that place going nuts. Now, unlike last week, Rodgers hadn't practiced in a couple weeks, right? He had to miss 2 weeks ago, and then last week he basically shows up on the weekend and plays the game. Well, he's a veteran. He knows it was a home game. They're funneling him the plays at home. It probably wasn't that difficult for him mentally, though I did see some quotes from him after the game. Like, a huge part of his preparation every week is taking the mental to the field and then going back to the mental. It's like how he gets locked in. And it makes sense. Listen, we all kind of learn differently. And Rodgers has a routine that clearly is a tried and true formula now for over a decade, right? I do think you're going to get a much better version of him this weekend. But they do have a lot of injuries. And the one thing Minnesota does really well is play offense. You know, Dalvin Cook is a stud. Thielen is a baller. Justin Jefferson is like an all-pro. I don't know if Minnesota upsets them, but this game, and then if San Francisco takes care of business, we basically have a playoff game next week at Levi Stadium. The Niners and Minnesota would both be 5-5, and that would be just a huge tiebreaker for that seventh spot. So this is a big spot. Packers win. Minnesota, we probably no longer talk about as a playoff team. And I think the Packers would, I don't know the driver's seat. I don't really know right now with the NFC if you can be in the driver's seat for that top seat. It kind of sucks. Like, forever, you got the 1 or the 2 seed, you got to buy. I do like the extra game, so I guess you can't have your cake and eat it too. But I did like multiple teams getting a bye. Remember how important it was a couple years ago when the Patriots blew it? That last game of the season, I think the Dolphins and the Chiefs ended up getting the number 2 seed and the Ravens got knocked out and the Chiefs hosted the AFC Championship game and they went to the Super Bowl. I mean, it used to have huge repercussions. Saints at Philly. I saw Greg Cosell was saying that, you know, they kind of changed the offense a little bit for Hurts. They put him more in the shotgun. And against Denver, they looked really good. Now, they ran the ball really well. Devontae Smith, I questioned a little bit coming out just because I was like, you know, he's like 165 pounds. But my buddy in the SEC that does the SEC for an NFL team was like, I think you're overthinking it. This kid has played at his weight his entire life. That's how he plays. So it's not like he was 190 pounds and now he's 170 pounds and has to learn how to play or vice versa. Like, this is the weight the guy plays in. And when you watch him play, you go, he's freaking really, really good. Now, I don't quite know what to make of Jalen Hurts. Every time I start crushing him, he starts playing better. The Saints, I don't totally trust. And I know they kind of got screwed last week against the Titans on some bad calls. But it's like, the more and more you play backups or third stringers, the more and more they get exposed. There's a reason they're backups, right? Yeah, I say it all the time. Like, a Bosa brother can be out, a TJ Watt can be out, a Peyton Manning, a Tom Brady can be out for a game. And if you're watching it, you might not notice. You might not see any difference that team, whoever it may be, Kyler Murray can be out. Colt McCoy, shit, they win pretty easily against the Niners. Well, then you're like, oh, Colts is going to keep winning. No, he's a backup for a reason. The more and more backups have to play, the more and more that guy gets exposed because he's a backup. He has limitations. And these defensive coordinators all make $2, $3 million. Like, they know how to exploit you. They just need a little bit of film. In the moment, like, they have previous film, but they want to see how you're playing right now. And once they see how you're playing right now, they do everything possible to get you in a position where you're going to be uncomfortable. And Sean Payton, like we were talking about the coaching salaries earlier, was also right up there, $15 million. So Sean Payton's probably making like $18 million, probably a stupid amount of money, which is a lot for W-2. Like, I'd want to separate. I'd want like 90% of that on the 1099 so I could open some office space and get some write-offs. You know, I don't want to pay all those taxes. But that's, and I think Florio mentioned that it's not all straight salary. They do a lot of finagling, which is smart. You never want your salary to be that high. Even though it sounds great, but it's like, that's what the government wants so they can tax it all. I don't even know who to pick in this game. Like, I want to pick Philly, but I don't really trust, you know, Jalen Hurts. Now they'd be in a big spot. They're 4-6. All of a sudden, are they 5-6 and competing for a wild card spot? But I don't trust Trevor Siemian. If the Saints lose this game, like, I'm sorry, they're not making the playoffs. If the Saints want to make the playoffs, they have to win this game. If you can't beat Philly with Trevor Siemian, who's your quarterback moving forward with Jameis tearing his ACL, you're just, I'm not considering you a playoff team anymore. That would go out the window. So I guess I'm picking the Eagles in this game. Me and Stucky talked about this for the weekend pod. The Cowboys and Chiefs is just a fantastic game on paper. It really is. And the best part about this is both these two teams, you know, look like themselves 5 or 6 days ago. Like, the Cowboys, Atlanta's not very good. But that's what a really good team after a shitty loss looks like. We are going to bludgeon you. And before you could blink, it was 36-3. You're like, oh my God, this was crazy. They just have so many weapons. And Dak, I've had to learn to come around on him a little bit. And I always liked the guy, rooted for the guy. He's an incredible story. It's hard not to like the human being. The skill set, but maybe they're so talented around him, it doesn't really matter because he's probably competed to be like a top five quarterback this year. As someone who anointed Justin Herbert really early, like, Dak's been better than Justin Herbert all season. He just has. Like, Kyler's been out. Russell's been out. You'd say like Mahomes, Rodgers. He's been better than Brady. Like, he's earned his money this season, which I respect, and they've been freaking awesome. But the Chiefs, the team that we just saw play the Raiders, like, that's the Kansas City Chiefs. That's Andy Reid, $15 million coach. That's Patrick Mahomes, $45 million quarterback. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. And at home, now that you just win that Raider game and everyone's like, they're winning the AFC West. Because, of course, they would win it 6 straight years. That's all they do is win the AFC West. I have a hard time seeing the Chiefs lose this game. But I don't love the matchup, you know, for the Chiefs. Because how do they cover all those wide receivers? Amari's a stud. CeeDee Lamb's a beast. Their running game's really good. Jarwin's, I don't know. I think it's a tough matchup for Kansas City. To me, the key in a game like this for Kansas City, even if it's going to be a shootout, is to get up early. Get up early. Get that hot start. It's kind of what they did last week. And then you just kind of jump them. You know, it's a little harder when you got to come from behind because, one, they don't rush the passer that well. And the Cowboys can just keep scoring. You know, it's really probably their best attribute. When they are on, and I saw the weather report, it's not supposed to be like some snowy game for an indoor team. The over-under's 56. I say hammer the over, but whenever I say that, the final score will probably be like 17 to 10. And then the last game, which I think is a little bit of an AFC kind of wild card spot playoff game. The Raiders were 5-2, and they looked really, really good. And then shit hit the fan. Gruden, booted, now suing the league. Ruggs, in jail. Damon Arnett, threatening to kill people with like 7 different guns in an Instagram post. And they have been in shambles ever since. They've lost a couple games, and they just got... I mean, they got embarrassed on Sunday Night Football against their division rival. Like, they got told, you don't belong at the same table with us. Go sit at the little kid's table. And how do they bounce back? I saw Derek Carr say today, or maybe said this yesterday, that this is not a team from the past. Because the last 2 years, I think they started 7-4 one year and 6-3 another year, and they just fell apart down the stretch. Both years, like 8-8, 7-9, missed the playoffs by a lot. And I think the message that they're telling everyone inside that building is like, this is different. This is different. Well, if it is different, you beat the Bengals. You know, and I know several weeks ago, we all kind of anointed the Bengals, and rightfully so. You beat the Ravens. It's one thing to beat the Ravens. It's another thing the way they beat them, right? They outclassed them. And then ever since, and sometimes this happens when you're a team that's never accomplished anything, just like any human being. If you haven't accomplished anything, it is kind of hard to just not be cocky. Right. Or just like, you know, I'm just and be humble. It's easier when like really successful people like be humble with your success. Like, yeah, it was the first time I ever tasted success. You know, it's difficult. It's actually very, very understandable. And the more and more success you have, I'd say in any walk of life, it's easier, unless that's your true personality, to just kind of lay low. You don't have to get up and do cartwheels over every deal you close. Right. And I think the Bengals, like, this is kind of a little bit of a back against the wall game. Because you come in, you get your ass kicked by the Raiders, like, you're not making the playoffs. You're just not. Because the Raiders would just prove they're better than you, and their schedule down the stretch, like, the Raiders could just find a way to get to 10 wins. But I don't trust the Raiders in this spot. Not because I don't think they're not talented enough to beat the Bengals, but all those things that I listed, that's a lot to overcome. It really is. And it's one thing, the emotional toll that it has on you, seeing a teammate get into a wreck and the visuals, you live in the town. I'm sure if you're in Vegas, I saw Henry Ruggs missed a breathalyzer test, so they had to pull him back to jail. Like, it's just, it's a terrible, terrible story. You know, it's one thing, Damon Arnett, half the team probably didn't even like the guy. Thought the guy was a clown. It's another thing to have a guy that you really cared about. And I know a couple of people on the staff, like, they really, really liked Henry Ruggs. That'll rock you. It really will. And it rocks them on the field. Henry Ruggs was an ascending player, an ascending dominant player who had an elite skill. He was the fastest guy on the field every time he touched the field. At worst, he had an equal in Tyreek Hill. That was the only guy in the league. So you remove him. That's a huge part of their offense because they had every other piece. They had a sweet tight end. They had a slot receiver. They had multiple running backs. They obviously had the quarterback. Now it throws everything out of whack. You put Deshaun, who's just, you know, at this point in time, it feels like a mercenary. Like, he'll just go wherever, even though he's not that good anymore. But, you know, ultimately, like, Zach Taylor, who I saw Zach Taylor said this week, whenever he goes to Vegas, he just gambles for 72 hours. He doesn't go to the pool. He doesn't go to shows. He doesn't do anything but gamble. I'm like, that is the most relatable thing I've ever heard an NFL football coach say. Because I'm the same. When I go to Vegas, I ain't going to the pools. I'm not going to see Celine Dion. I'm just going to gamble, drink, and I'll watch sports too and gamble in sports. But I'm just going to gamble. I'm not going to do any of the other crap. Even though the other crap I've heard from friends pretty fun. Maybe I do need to venture out. But that's just, I feel very at home in the casino floor. I do. And so does Zach Taylor. So it made me like him a lot more. But I guess I would pick the Raiders in this spot, but I do not feel great. Their season, and really you could say their franchise, they missed the playoffs this year. Are they going to blow it up again, start from scratch? It's just a never-ending cycle with the Raiders. Okay, let's get to the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram. What I will do is, I got some oldies here. I'll start with like 6 days away. Little fun question. In the next four games, who wins the most? Ravens or Dolphins? I'd say the Dolphins.
I'll just... The Ravens?
I'm not even going to look at the schedule. The Ravens this week... Who do they... They play someone kind of crappy. Who the hell do the Ravens play? I can't think of it off the top of my head. Let's look. Let's play the game for you. Okay, Miami. Next three games. Jets, Panthers, Giants, Jets. Okay, I see what you're doing here. I see what you're doing here. The Ravens. They play the Bears, the Browns, the Steelers, the Browns. Call it a push. I think the Jets could beat the Dolphins one of these games. Love the pod. Huge Vikings fan. If you were the new Vikings GM next couple years, what do you do with Cousins? Let him play 2022 or resign him? Or let it play out? I just let it play out. No rush. He's made a ton of money. He has no room to complain. Franchise has paid him $150 guaranteed dollar million. Not $150. $150 million. He's been good, but he hasn't been great. And I think anytime you pay a guy $150 million... You want greatness. It's weird because he really has produced. This is a big weekend for him. But yeah, you 100% let it play out. You are not extending him again. I personally don't think Spielman's going to get fired. Could be wrong. I think Spielman's pretty good. Just a sup. I retweeted Draymond. Tell you this, Draymond, who's hosting a pod for The Volume, it's probably the ideal podcast host to be a player. Because a lot of players, let's face it, aren't going to say anything. Draymond will talk shit about anybody and just will not care. I think Draymond... You know, Coward's got a pretty good eye for talent. I'll give him that. I will give Coward that. Longtime listener. I'm on my wife accounts, bro. I don't have Instagram. Well, you're missing out. A lot of fun stuff going on Instagram. Why does Shanahan destroy McVay? Also, as longtime Washington fan... How would your offseason look for the football team to make us a legitimate contender? I don't know. I mean, they're just more physical, it feels like, when they match up with the Rams. Even though I watch the Rams play other teams and they physically overmatch them. For whatever reason, Aaron Donald doesn't really kill them. That's a huge reason. Aaron Donald does not go wild and take over the game. Kyle doesn't really care about throwing. He just won't throw it. Jalen Ramsey. And for whatever reason, the defense always plays well against the Rams. And now, it was understandable when they played Goff. You know, Goff can't move. He was a sitting duck, and they always had a good pass rush. I did not expect that game to look like that. I mean, I thought the Niners could win, but Stafford was atrocious. Now, one of the picks, you know, goes off the guy's body. It's not his fault, but Matt Stafford has not played well the last 2 weeks. He's got to pick it up, you know. You get all this money, you get traded for 2 first-round picks. You're viewed as the savior, the guy that can get him over the top. Like, there's a lot of pressure on him. You got his wife throwing pretzels at people, which, you know, I've always thought I never get mad at family members for doing shit at games. Like, it's emotional. You know, I'm unemotional about most things in my life. But if you were to fuck with my wife, my daughter, my son, my mom, you know, brother, depends what you did, but those people, I wouldn't act normal. I never hold them to the same standard. And I also think, like, just weird things happen in games. If you didn't see Kelly Stafford, I think her name is, threw a pretzel at a fan or something. Personally, like, you pay $12 for a pretzel at Levi Stadium. I'm just eating that thing. Love the pod. I saw a stat the other day. If the Colts would have held on to both their double-digit leads, Ravens, Titans, they would be the top team in the AFC in the moment. I think Ursay tweeted that out. Ursay legitimately tweeted out, if we would have won 2 games, we would be the number one seed. Or we would, you know, it's like, well, yeah, Jim. I mean, if the Jacksonville Jags had won like 4 of their games, they wouldn't be 2-7. You know, they'd be 6-3. That's not the way it works. You lost. But I agree. So the question is, they have some big games coming up, Cardinals, Bucks, and Pats. You see, I think the Colts could win this weekend. I really do against the Bills. I think the Colts are playing well. I think the Colts are a solid team. I don't totally trust the quarterback, not in like a series or a half. It just feels like one play a game, he can screw you. Jonathan Taylor, stud. The defense is playing well. Frank Reich, I've always been a Chris Ballard guy. I think the Colts are kind of coming. Keep an eye on them Indy Colts. Good call on throwing that money on the Niners. Was a pretty good call. Made some money. I'm betting the Niners this week, too. Long time, first time. Please keep the authenticity up. It's refreshing in the media days, these days. People often say that. I don't mean, aren't people just, are most people faking it? That's what I always wonder. Like, I'm just being myself. And when I, and because of this job, I've got to know a lot of people in the media. They act pretty normal, too, when I'm around them. Over the years, going to games with them. And when I did local TV, I'd be around them in some of these shows or interacting with them on social media, like in the DMs. And then when I see them on TV or read their stuff, it's like a different human being. I think the media, and I told my buddy Ethan Sherwood Strauss, who quit The Athletic to go to his own Substack because he felt, and he's just letting it rip now. I love Ethan. Ethan's really smart. Cal guy, used to cover the Warriors. Now he's just kind of covering everything. And I really do think Twitter has made a lot of people in the media way worse. I deleted Twitter off my phone. I mean, I still go on it in my iPad or my computer or whatever. But I think people get so obsessed. And the number one thing I would say people tell you that are successful is stop worrying what other people think. Twitter's all about worrying what people think of you in 140 characters. It's like I really try to avoid that because I think it makes you worse. I think you become too obsessed with other people. And I tell my mom this all the time. She's like, why do you talk like you talk? Mom, I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. The only person I care, I mean, obviously I would care what you think and what my future wife thinks and one day what my children think. But other than that, none of these other idiots are paying my bills. So if a media member's like, John, you can't say that. Fuck, I can't. I just said it. You know, I guess I also was brought up a lot different than a lot of these people. You know, I'm not some guy in love with academia, though I got a couple degrees. You know, I got a master's degree. No big deal. Fresno State. Fresno State. My question. I'm also lucky I work for myself. You know, and you know, it's not like Colin doesn't give a crap what I do. Lifelong Cowboy fans. Am I overreaching in thinking they should move off McCarthy and promote Kellen Moore to head coach? McCarthy doesn't call offense or defense. And Kellen has clearly played a huge role in Dak's development. You've already invested heavily in Dak. Why not give him some continuity with the guy he is obviously the most comfortable with? I know Jerry isn't big on moving off head coaches, but the league is trending toward guys like Kellen, and he is already in the building. If they don't, he's likely gone. I agree. I mean, sometimes, you know, in business, you have to make very, very tough decisions. And you got to give Mike some credit. He bounced back well after last season. Right? Last season, embarrassment. This season, done a good job. But, like, Kellen Moore and Dak are the team. However far they go, it's going to be because of Dak. And however far Dak goes is because of Kellen. And Kellen's going to get offered head coaching jobs. The University of Washington for sure is going to offer him a job. I would imagine many NFL teams are going to offer him a job. Are you just going to let him walk? What is Mike McCarthy without Kellen Moore? It's not like Mike's calling the plays. I think that's pretty risky. I'm with you. I would do it. Now, I think the hard thing is, I've never known a guy as rich as Jerry, but I've known some pretty rich older people, and they do get a little softer. You know, I think when you make, you know, hay in life, like in your 30s, your 40s, and 50s, it's easy to just be, you know, pretty cutthroat. Kind of. But as you age, you know, you get some perspective, and I bet Jerry's a little softer than he was now in his 50s, you know, than he was in his 50s. I think he would have a hard time firing McCarthy. And like you said, he already struggles because he's pretty loyal to these guys. The move 100% would be to fire him. 1,000%. And that's not even acting like Mike's doing a bad job. He's doing a good job this year, doing whatever he's doing, and I'm not really sure, but seems like he's doing a good job. I had to come in hot with the Middlecoff mailbag. I'm a diehard Rams fan, and let's just say I'm not having the greatest night. Can you please provide some insight on why they absolutely refuse to run the ball? Their running back gets like 5 carries every time he carries it, and McVay refuses to stick to the run. If I see another empty backfield shotgun formation with 7-yard line, I'm going to be sick. I think I said this after the game. I think Sean McVay got away from his roots, and his roots are slamming the football. That is what he learned from the Shanahans and John Gruden. That is what those, the people that taught McVay football, they hang their hat on running the football. And if you look at LaFleur, Rodgers is a way better player than Stafford, obviously. I mean, I'm not, clearly. So LaFleur has meshed, like, hey, Aaron, I know you like playing in the shotgun and going 3-4 wide and slinging it around. You've earned that right for us to keep running your plays. But you're also, like, I was hired here for a reason, going to run my plays. And we're going to take Aaron Jones, and we're going to take this tank that we draft in the second round named A.J. Dillon, and we're going to slam it down people's throats. And we're going to make them wave the white flag, and we're going to make them say uncle. And because some nights, you know, you might get immunized, it might miss a game, and when you come back, you might be a little off. And guess what? We're going to hand it to A.J. Dillon, and we're going to ram it down Seattle's throat. McVay is so obsessed right now with the throw because he has this new toy. I've said over and over, copy the Packers. Now, A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones are better than what the Rams have in their backfield. But I think they get too pass happy with Stafford. I'm saying this in a nice way. Who the hell is Stafford? Like, he's really talented, but it's not like he comes, it's not like he's Tom Brady, where he's like, we're running my offense. Like, no, Matt, you needed us. You needed us. Like, when Kevin Durant came to the Warriors, he needed the Warriors. They also needed him. He was Kevin Durant. Like, Matt Stafford, to me, is not on that level. He's a really talented player who's 33 and had never accomplished anything. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo has two more playoff victories than he does. So it's just, I think Sean is just getting a little too Matt Stafford happy. And as we see with every game that goes by, is that Matt Stafford can't carry you. Okay, Broncos fan. Curious why all the quarterbacks expected to be available after the season, why Denver isn't at least the top two landing spots. Offensive weapons, Judy, Sutton, Fant, Gordon, Javonte Williams, KJ Hamler, Tim Patrick, no big deal. I see you, Elway and Patton. Defense has been very there for years. Maybe I'm biased, but for someone like Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers, that's the best option. Also, have 5 picks in the first 3 rounds next season and cap space available. Yeah, they'll be in the mix for sure. Why would Aaron Rodgers leave the Packers and go to Denver? Why? I'm not saying you're saying that, but we need to stop that. In what world would you leave the Packers where he went 13-3, 13-3, and now he's 8-2? So he's 26, what's 6 plus 8? 34, 6. He's 34-8. In his life. 34-8, and he's going to leave? Now, Russell's a different story. But Russell's going to leave to go to the Denver Broncos? I'm not being mean, but I think you're like more likely to land like a Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, that's, you know, that's probably what you're going to end up with. If a game were to be played and scored in something like fantasy football points, where individual players accumulated points based on yards gained and end zone entries, and defense special teams counted for points as well, what team do you think would dominate? My pick would be the Cowboys. Also, would there be a defensive player more valuable than Trayvon Diggs? Well, this year, no, because, I mean, he scored, you know, multiple touchdowns, has a bunch of picks. I'm not trying to be an asshole. I think that'd be pretty stupid. You know, we play football, it's a team game, you know, and you win by scoring touchdowns as a team. So I think scoring individually, it's like turning football into like golf or tennis. And again, I know what you're saying. And the Cowboys, you're right, would just put up a stupid amount of yards. The Chiefs would be really good. But I think that's the pushback. Well, some of our, I'm a little old school when it comes to football. Like, I don't need, you know, the Patriot game. I'm recording this as the Patriot game's ending. It's 19-0. I don't need every game to be, now that game was terrible, but I don't need every game to be 50-48. You know, I'm cool with some low scoring defensive, just bloodbaths, you know? But I hear you. Like, I like playing daily fantasy. But I would not like that at all. Why do you think, who do you think is the best fit for the Seattle head coach and if and when they fire Pete or he retires? I've been thinking a lot about this. I don't think he can fire Pete Carroll. He's the best coach in the history of the franchise by a mile. You guys have won so much with him. He just won the division last year. They went 12-4. They won the NFC West by 2 games. I think you got to force him into retirement. Now, where it gets ugly, if you're moving off him and he refuses to retire, and let's face it, The old guy has a lot of young energy. And I don't see Pete like, yeah, I'll just retire, man. I'll just fake retire. You guys pay me to go away. See ya. Like, it does feel like Pete's a little more prideful. I know he chomps gum and walks around in, you know, the big white shoes and just skinny vegan. But I think Pete's got a little crazy man deep in there. And I do not think he'll go quietly. But I do expect Russell Wilson to make a power play. Chris Peterson would make some sense. I don't, you know, I would love to see that. I don't know if he'd take the job, though. That would be really cool. Sign me up for that. Suffering Raiders fan. I know we're 5-4 and we've had some fucked up stuff happen. It feels like we got another 8 or 9 win season, missing the playoffs once again. I tend to believe it's time to blow this shit up and start over. I love some car, but this organization fails miserably in putting any stability around him. You think he sticks around next year? Well, he said over and over, if they trade him or they cut him, he's going to retire. He doesn't want to play for any other team. Now, you know, I think a lot of other teams would really want him. And if he was available, I think teams would be lined up to get him. The football team, Denver. Now, would he play for Denver, given that he played in the division? I don't know. But I think teams would do whatever they could to get Derek to play. I'm sure I'm missing teams that need quarterbacks, but there's a ton, right? Philly, the Eagles would love to have him. So I don't know. I think he would have to come to a fork in the road. I think it's a weird spot. So my guess is that, the Saints, you don't think Sean Payton would like him? I don't know. We just got to see how the season plays out. If they miss the playoffs, I think Mark Davis detonates the whole thing. And they hire a new GM, they hire a new coach, and then we'll see. I think Doug Peterson makes a lot of sense there. And if Doug Peterson comes in, why wouldn't Doug Peterson just want Derek? I feel like after the New England game, the league was given the blueprint to beat the Cowboys. Run it right at them and play physical with their skill guys. Denver did it. And if you have the personnel and coach who isn't too arrogant to follow the blueprint, you will beat Dallas. Am I crazy? I really tend to think that the Denver game was somewhat of an anomaly. Once they get Gregory back and DeMarcus Lawrence back, you know, I think Micah Parsons a physical player. I think they can run it as well with Zeke and Pollard. Like, I think they're a pretty well-balanced physical team. Now, we're going to learn a lot these next 2 weeks. They play, obviously, the Chiefs on Sunday, and then they play Thursday night. So they're going to play 4 games and, you know, whatever. 72 hours? I'm not great at math. Even though I actually am pretty good at math. I'm just not great at adding on the fly in my head. But I'm pretty good. I'm very, quantitative. Is that the way to say it? I'm quantitative. I'm a numbers guy. But I'm not good like ad-libbing, you know? I think 72 hours is 4 days. Kyle Van Noy just picked off Josh Rosen. Okay, we'll end on this. I found you through Coward. Big fan. 23. Love the young demo. Diehard Steelers fan. So I've never known anything beside Big Ben. The Steelers are another team that would like Derek. It terrifies me to find out what it's like to not have a franchise quarterback. It feels like nothing has been done to find Ben's successor beside bringing in Dwayne Haskins, which is fine as a backup, but is nothing more. Do you think they should draft a quarterback or go for a veteran in the offseason? Also, I'm a student at Liberty. I heard you say on the pod that you hadn't watched Liberty play. I don't blame you. I've been to all the home games, and I'm no professional analyst. But despite the lousy competition, Malik Willis can play elite runner with a rocket arm. He's probably a huge project, but I encourage you to check him out. I actually watched this was several weeks ago, the Ole Miss Liberty game. He definitely, he's an intriguing prospect. People were talking about him going like number one overall. Clearly not. In just my one game of exposure to him, you know, in my experience, and I haven't been in the league now in, 8 years, but, you know, from my time and before, a guy like that went like the fourth round and you got to work with him and there was no pressure. Now, he's probably going to go in the second round. Hell, he might go late in the first round, which is a little, just puts a lot of pressure on the guy, but he's big. He's agile. You're right. He's got a hose. He's an intriguing prospect. As a quarterback, your character and all that stuff matters a lot. So how he's wired, I don't know. I haven't asked anybody. But let's assume he's wired the right way. He's going to go probably higher than he should, given that he needs a lot of work. Major project. But, you know, Jordan Love was a major project. He went late first round. Hell, Trey Lance was a big project, went third overall. Okay, everyone have a good weekend. I think I just saw an Atlanta Falcon throw another pick. And I'll see you guys all next week. Peace.
The volume.